You know, I was thinking about the hierarchy of DIY disasters the other day.
The hierarchy. Oh, I like where this is going.
Yeah, like if you're tiling a bathroom and you mess up the grout lines, you just have an ugly bathroom.
Right. It hurts your pride, but not much else.
Exactly. Or if you're framing a shed and you're off by, I don't know, half an inch, you have a slightly crooked shed.
Yeah.
It's annoying, but nobody dies.
Nobody dies from a crooked shed, well, usually.
Right. But then you cross this threshold into electrical work. And specifically, messing around inside that gray metal box in the basement, the breaker panel.
Oh, yeah. That feels like a completely different universe of risk.
Because it is. And yet there is this pervasive myth in the DIY community. I call it the click means stick philosophy.
Oh, man. The it fits fallacy, I'd argue it is probably the single most dangerous heuristic in residential electrical work. This whole idea that just because a piece of plastic physically snaps into a piece of metal, it must be engineered to carry current safely through that connection.
Right, which is just insane when you actually think about it. So today, on this deep dive, we are stripping back the plastic. We're looking at the engineering behind that click.
We are decoding the absolute alphabet soup of general electric GE breaker compatibility.
And we've combed through the manufacturer specs, the UL listings, and this really compelling breakdown from a DIYer who went down this rabbit hole so we don't have to.
And I actually really appreciate the source material for this one because the author frames the electrical panel not just as an appliance, but almost like a crime scene waiting to happen.
A detective story.
Exactly. It's about decoding the hieroglyphics inside that box to understand the vital difference between compatibility and interchangeability.
Two words that sound the same but mean very, very different things.
Yeah.
So let's start where our source started, the humble realization.
The aha moment.
Right. So this DIYer wanted to do something totally simple. Add a workshop circuit. You know, lights, maybe a small compressor, nothing crazy.
Standard weekend project. Standard weekend project. They open the panel, completely confident, ready to work, and they hit a wall.
Well, they hit a realization because they realized that for years they had been looking at the panel label, you know, that dense sticker on the inside of the door, as just legal boilerplate.
Like the terms and conditions on a software update.
Exactly. You just scroll past it to click, I agree. It looks like a wall of text and part numbers.
Just noise.
But our source realized that the label isn't a warning, it is a spec sheet. It is literally the instruction manual for the entire energy system of your house.
That is a huge shift in perspective. It's not just cover your ass legal text from GE, it's the blueprint.
Right.
So instead of just driving to the hardware store and guessing, they sat down and created what they called a field notes table. And I actually love the strategy for any project, not just electrical.
It's incredibly disciplined. They wrote down four specific variables before they even looked at a catalog or a website.
Okay, lay them out for us. First, the brand, GE. Seems obvious, but you'd be amazed how many people try to mix brands just because they have a spare breaker lying around in the garage.
Oh, I've seen it. This square D fits. I'll just jam it in.
We will get to why that is so bad. Second variable was the type, main lug or main breaker.
Which dictates how power actually enters the system.
Exactly. Third one, and this is the confusing one, is the family.
The family. This is where you get into the acronyms, right?
Right. THQL, THQP. This is essentially the genetic code of the breaker. And finally, the needs. You know, amperage and protection type like AFCI or GFCI.
Okay, hold on. I want to drill down on the family aspect for a second. Because the source emphasizes that the label explicitly tells you use these breaker types. It's not a polite suggestion.
No, it's a mandate.
And it also says something kind of cryptic. It'll say something like, use tandems only here. What is the actual physics behind that? Why can't I put a tandem breaker anywhere I want if it physically clips in?
Okay, so this is where we really have to visualize the inside of the panel. You have the bus bar, that's the metal spine, carrying all the power down the center.
The spine. Got it.
And protruding from that spine, you have stabs. These little metal fins that the breakers physically bite onto to pull power.
Okay, I'm picturing metal fins.
Now, a standard breaker has a certain amount of surface area clamping onto that stab. It is mathematically designed to handle heat dissipation in a very specific way.
Because electricity generates heat.
Always. But a tandem breaker, which is where you squeeze two separate circuits into one single slot, changes that geometry entirely.
Oh, because it's physically smaller.
Right. It might be thinner, or the clip mechanism might be offset to fit two on one stab.
So you're basically doubling the heat potential in the exact same amount of physical space.
Potentially, yes. And if you shove that tandem breaker into a slot that isn't engineered for it, you might get a connection that is physically loose on a microscopic level, even if it feels tight to your hand.
And in the electrical world, loose means heat.
Loose means resistance. Resistance generates heat. That heat causes oxidation, which is basically rust, which creates more resistance.
Which creates more heat.
Exactly. It's a runaway thermal cycle until the metal literally melts or starts arcing.
That is the absolute nightmare scenario. Burning down the house because you wanted a dedicated outlet for your table saw.
That's why the source says you have to move your brain from does it fit to is it listed. The label saying use tandems only in slots 20 through 30 isn't the manufacturer trying to restrict you for fun.
Right.
It's because the bus bar in slots 1 through 19 literally might not be thick enough to handle the heat profile or the physical stress of a tandem breaker.
That is a very sobering thought. Okay, so we've read the label. We know we have a GE panel. Now we are staring at the shelf in a hardware store or browsing online, and we see those two acronyms we mentioned earlier, THQL and THQP.
Ah, the classic GE dilemma.
To me, looking at them, they look like typos of each other.
They do. And if you aren't paying attention, you just grab the wrong one.
Yeah.
But they are completely different animals.
So how do we decode this for the listener? Is there an easy memory trick to know which is which?
Think of it like a decoder ring. The difference is purely the physical form factor. THQL, think of the L as large.
L for large, okay.
This is your standard full-size breaker. It's about an inch wide per pole. If you close your eyes and picture a generic circuit breaker, you are picturing a THQL.
Got it. Standard chunky breaker.
Now, THQP. Think of a P as petite or maybe plug-in. These are the thin format breakers. They are literally half the width, half an inch. You can fit two of them in the space of one THQL.
So these are the space savers. This is how you magically get 40 circuits in a panel that looks like it only has 20 slots.
Exactly. But, and this is that crucial constraint we talked about, you cannot just decide to use THQPs because you ran out of room for your new hot tub.
Because of the bus tabs again.
Precisely. GE panels have a very specific, unique feature. The bus tabs for THQP slots usually have a perpendicular crossbar. It looks almost like a little T or a cross.
I've seen that.
That cross allows the half-width breaker to clip on horizontally and securely. If you try to force a THQP into a slot meant for a THQL, which is just a straight vertical fin, it often won't latch correctly.
Or worse, you force it and it sort of wedges in there.
Right. You might break the plastic rejection tab, which is literally put there by engineers to stop you from doing this, and you make contact. But now the breaker is just sort of floating there. It's resting, not clamped.
So if I have a full panel, and I think, hey, I'm a genius. I'll just pull out this fat THQL and swap in two skinny THQPs to make room. I might be violating the basic physics of the panel.
You are absolutely violating the UL listing of the panel, and you are creating a massive fire hazard. If the door label doesn't explicitly say accepts THQP in slots X through Y, you do not do it.
Wow. Now, there is another layer to this alphabet soup that our source warns about, and I want to bring it up because I feel like I've seen this exact thing on forums. The QP myth.
Oh, boy.
Yes. People look at their GE panel, they see it takes THQP, and then they are at the store and see a breaker from Siemens. And the Siemens breaker says QP on the package. They think, hey, QP matches QP. We're good to go.
That is a textbook example of what the source brilliantly calls shopping by vibes.
Shopping by vibes. That's terrifying when you're dealing with 240 volts of electricity.
It's incredibly dangerous. Just because the letters match doesn't mean the engineering matches. Siemens QP is a completely different proprietary product line.
So the guts are different.
Everything is different. The internal resistance, the trip curve, the jaw tension of the clip, it's all different. The source puts it very bluntly. Do not assume a Siemens QP works in a GE panel just because they both use the letters Q and P.
It's like assuming diesel fuel works in your gas car just because the nozzle happens to fit in the hole.
That is a surprisingly accurate analogy. The engine, or in this case, the bus bar, isn't built for that fuel. You might get lucky and the car runs for a mile, but you are actively destroying the engine.
Which brings us to the real emotional core of this whole deep dive, the battle between compatibility and interchangeability.
The big showdown.
Because honestly, to a layperson, they sound like synonyms.
In the dictionary, they are synonyms. In the National Electrical Code, they are sworn enemies.
Explain that.
Interchangeable just means it physically fits. You can shove it in and the door closes. Compatible means it was rigorously tested and legally approved by a safety organization to work together.
And the source talks heavily about the trap of online forums here. You know the exact type of post. Someone asks, can I use a Siemens breaker in a GE panel?
And some random user named Sparky1985 replies, yeah, buddy, I did that 5 years ago and my house is still standing.
Exactly.
The source calls that confusing anecdotes with engineering evidence. That is pure survivorship bias. Just because it hasn't catastrophically failed yet doesn't mean it's safe.
It could be microversing inside the panel every single time you turn on your vacuum cleaner.
And slowly degrading the bus bar until one day it just pops.
So to fight this forum logic, the source developed what they call a decision ladder. And I'm a sucker for a good framework. Walk us through this hierarchy of trust.
It's brilliant. It's four levels. Level one is the absolute gold standard, the panel label.
Meaning?
If the door label says use type THQL and you are standing there holding a type THQL breaker from GE, you are 100% good. End of story.
Simple. Love it. What's level two?
Manufacturer documentation. Let's say your panel label is worn off or painted over, which happens all the time in older houses.
Oh, yeah. Half the time it's unreadable.
If you can find the original manual for that exact panel model number online, and that manual lists the approved breakers, that is level two. Still very, very safe.
Okay. Level three seems to be where the waters get a little murky. UL classified.
Yes. This is a very specific legal and engineering term. Mm-hmm. There are companies, Eaton is a major one, that manufacture classified breakers.
Classified meaning what?
Meaning they take Underwriters Laboratories, UL, to take their Eaton breaker and test it inside a competitor's panel, like a GE panel.
Oh, interesting.
They run it through hell. And if it passes all the thermal and short circuit tests, UL says, okay, this Eaton breaker is classified for use in this specific GE panel.
So it's not made by GE, but it's certified by an independent lab to be safe in GE.
Yes, but, and this is a massive asterisk, you have to verify the hard documentation. You cannot just blindly trust a cardboard package that says FITS GE in big letters.
Because FITS is that interchangeable word again.
Exactly. You actually need to look up the specific UL list and make sure your exact panel model number is on that Eaton classification list.
That sounds like actual homework.
It is absolutely homework. But doing homework is better than having a fire investigator do homework on your ashes.
Fair point. And then we have level four.
Level four is unacceptable, period. That is the it fits, or my neighbor said it works, or it looks exactly the same logic. The source assigns this a confidence score of 1 out of 10.
I really like that confidence score metric. You wouldn't drive a car down the highway if you had a 1 out of 10 confidence in the brakes?
No, you wouldn't.
So why power your home where your family sleeps? With a 1 out of 10 confidence in the breakers.
Precisely. You want a 10 out of 10 confidence when you go to bed at night.
So let's say you've done the detective work. You're at level one. You know for a fact you need a GE THQL 20 amp breaker. Now you have to actually go buy the thing.
The procurement phase.
Right. And this is where the source switches from being an engineer to basically a supply chain auditor. I was honestly surprised by how much risk there is just in buying the part.
Electrical sourcing is the Wild West right now, and the global supply chain issues of the last few years have just magnified the problem.
The source breaks it down into three retail categories. First up, the big box stores, your Home Depots, your Lowe's.
This is their preferred first stop, and the reason is chain of custody. These massive chains buy their inventory directly from the manufacturers in bulk.
So the risk of getting a fake is low.
Very low. Plus, if you buy the wrong one, you can just walk back in and return it easily.
Makes sense. Then you have the second category. Electrical supply houses.
The pro option.
Right, the places with the counter where all the contractors hang out at 6 a.m.
Exactly. If you need something weird, like a highly specific AFCI-GFCI combo breaker for a 30-year-old panel, this is where you go. It might cost you 20% more than the big box store, but you are getting genuine, expert-verified stock.
Then we have the third category, the online marketplaces, the Amazons and eBays of the world.
Danger zone. The source explicitly and repeatedly warns against this route.
Why? Because there is a surprisingly large black market for counterfeit circuit breakers.
Yes.
It just blows my mind that anyone would counterfeit a $10 or $20 item. It seems like so much effort for so little profit.
It's a pure volume game for these counterfeiters. And here is the truly terrifying part. A counterfeit breaker looks completely perfect on the outside. The GE logo is right. The UL sticker looks real. The plastic molding is identical.
But inside?
Inside, they might skip the expensive trip mechanism entirely.
Wait, what? Are you serious?
Completely serious. They just wire it internally as a permanent switch. If you have a short circuit or you overload the line, it physically cannot trip.
It won't break the circuit.
No.
Yeah.
We'll just happily let the electricity flow and flow until the wire inside your wall gets so hot it melts its insulation and catches the framing on fire. You have zero actual protection.
That is absolutely terrifying. You think you're safe, but you're worse off than having no breaker at all.
Because you have a false sense of security.
So avoiding the Amazon gamble for critical safety equipment is a hard, fast rule here.
Without a doubt.
Now, let's touch quickly on sizing, because the source mentions this selection logic table.
This is basic electrical theory, but it is so vital. The golden rule is you match the breaker to the wire gauge, not to the load you want to run.
Explain that, because I think a lot of DIYers get this backward.
Okay, so imagine you keep tripping a 15-amp breaker in your bedroom because you're trying to run a heavy-duty space heater and a hairdryer at the same time.
Very common scenario in the winter.
Your immediate DIY instinct is, well, the breaker's too small. I'll just go to the store, buy a 20-amp breaker, swap it out, and give the system more juice.
Right. Upgrade the system. Fix the bottleneck.
You absolutely cannot do that. The circuit breaker is not there to protect your hairdryer or your space heater. It is there for one reason, to protect the copper wire buried inside your drywall.
Ah.
If the house was built with 14-gauge wire on that circuit, that wire is physically only rated to handle 15 amps of current safely.
So if you put a 20-amp breaker on it,
and you turn on the heater and the hairdryer, and you pull 19 amps of current, the 20-amp breaker looks at that and thinks, 19 is less than 20, we're perfectly fine. It doesn't trip.
But the 14-gauge wire in the wall is screaming.
It is overheating rapidly, and since the breaker isn't tripping to stop the flow,
the wire itself basically becomes the fuse.
The wire becomes the fuse. And you really, really do not want a red-hot fuse that runs the entire length of your living room wall.
The wire becomes the fuse. That is a phrase that is going to stick with me.
It's the reality of the physics. There's actually a story in the source notes that really struck me regarding this intuitive respect for the equipment.
How about the field test?
Yeah. The source was at a store holding a generic, supposedly compatible breaker in their hand.
They were inspecting it before buying.
Right. And they noted that the retention clip, the part that grips the bus bar, it just felt cheap. The geometry didn't look as precise as the OEM part.
They said it didn't inspire trust.
Exactly. And they walked away. They put it down. That is a level of intuition that only comes from deeply respecting the danger of what you are working with.
They realize that even if the part number technically matches, if the physical build quality looks suspect, why risk your house over saving $5?
It's not worth it.
Which moves us beautifully to perhaps the most important part of this entire DIY journey, knowing when to quit. The source calls it the pro line.
This is honestly where the source earned my utmost respect. They did all this research, but they didn't try to be a hero at the end.
They had a very clear, allowed list for themselves. Mm-hmm. Planning the circuit, mapping the panel, running the wire, verifying the fitment. But then they had a pro required list.
And what was on that pro list? Final panel termination. Specifically, anything involving the main breaker or the main service entrance cables.
Let's talk about the main breaker myth. Because I feel like YouTube has made us all collectively hallucinate that we can swap a main breaker in 10 minutes.
Oh, it looks so incredibly easy on a tightly edited 5-minute video.
Right. Just pull this out. Push this in.
But here is the massive catch. In a lot of residential setups, you cannot turn off the power feeding into the top of that main breaker. It is live directly from the transformer on the street.
So you are literally working inches away from a live, unfused bomb.
Essentially, yes. If your screwdriver slips and bridges a connection, there is no breaker ahead of you to pop. It's an arc flash.
Terrifying. But even beyond the danger of electrocution, the force highlighted a technical reason to hire a pro that almost no casual DIYer knows about.
Torque. Torque. Yeah. Yes. This is fascinating.
Torque. Like how tight you screw in the wire.
Exactly that. When the source finally brought in the licensed electrician to finish the job, they noticed the pro used a specialized torque screwdriver.
Not just a regular flathead.
No, a calibrated tool that measures rotational force in inch pounds.
I can safely say I do not own a torque screwdriver. I just crank it until it stops turning. The old good and tight method.
The German torque spec.
Right. And that is a huge, huge problem in panels. See, the copper wire has a physical property called cold flow.
Cold flow, what does that mean?
It means copper is actually a relatively soft metal,
and
it slowly moves or deforms under sustained pressure over time.
Like putty.
On a microscopic level, yes. If you over-tighten that set screw on the breaker, you physically crush the copper wire, effectively thinning it out and creating a high-resistance weak point.
Okay, so you don't want to crush it.
But if you under-tighten it, it's even worse. The copper heats up and expands when you run the microwave, and then cools and contracts when you turn it off.
So the metal is expanding and contracting. It breathes.
It breathes. And over months and years of breathing, it slowly flows away from the screw. The connection gradually gets looser and looser.
And we already established what loose connections do.
Arcing. Heat. Fire.
So the torque screwdriver hits the Goldilocks zone.
Exactly. It applies the exact amount of clamping pressure engineered to hold the wire securely without crushing it, perfectly accounting for that cold flow over the next 20 years.
Wow.
That $500 tool the electrician brought in, that is what you are paying for. You aren't paying an hourly rate for him to just turn a screw.
You are paying for him to turn it to the exact mathematical specification required by physics.
Exactly.
That is the real deep dive insight right there. I always thought torque specs were just for rebuilding car engines or tightening lug nuts. I never once realized the solid metal inside my walls was actively moving.
It's alive, in a way.
It's also worth noting that while we've been focusing heavily on GE today, the source makes it very clear that this underlying logic applies everywhere. Murray, Commander, General Switch, Square D.
It is a universal rule. Compatibility is never, ever about brand loyalty.
It's not like, oh, I'm a Chevy guy, so I'll only buy Chevy parts for my truck.
Right. It is strictly about safety listing. If you have an old Murray panel, you need breakers explicitly listed for that specific Murray series. Period. Even if the company went out of business 20 years ago.
You have to find the classified replacement.
Exactly.
So if we zoom out from the bus gabs and the torque specs, what is the big takeaway here for the listener?
I think the source summarizes it perfectly.
Yeah.
Electrical safety is built entirely on boring things.
Boring things.
Boring things. Part numbers, warning labels, UL verification charts, proper torque. It is not exciting. It's not a viral hack.
It's just reading.
It's reading the manual. The biggest win for the author of this deep dive wasn't actually getting the workshop lights to turn on.
It was the act of slowing down.
It was the mental shift from thinking, I can totally make this fit, to stopping and asking, does the engineering actually allow this?
It really challenges that entire modern DIY ethos, doesn't it? The whole move fast and break things startup culture mentality.
In software development, moving fast and breaking things is fine. You get a bug, you patch it.
But in an electrical panel.
If you break things in a 200-amp panel, you burn down your house.
That is a very sobering but absolutely necessary perspective. And it makes you think. In an age where we have endless YouTube tutorials and TikTok life hacks at our fingertips, making everything look so easy.
True competence isn't just about the physical ability to do the work.
No. True competence is knowing the profound difference between something that can be done, because physically, sure, the plastic clips in, and something that should be done.
Knowing your limits.
Exactly. I want to leave you, the listener, with this thought to mull over. When you tackle your next project, are you trusting the physics and the engineering data, or are you just trusting that satisfying little click when things snap together?
Something to seriously think about the next time you open that gray metal door in your basement.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. See you next time.
Stay safe out there.